welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice from the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
So it's been a couple of weeks. Did you have a good Halloween?
I did.
What do you do?
We went to our youth minister's
house. You did something very Christian, churchy.
Yeah, well, we had a trunk or treat at our church, and then we went over to a party.
Oh, that's very, very cool. Did you happen to see the vendor-carved pumpkin?
Yes.
Wasn't that cool?
I did.
They carved a pumpkin with the Lifeway logo.
Yes.
And it was kind of black and orange.
We've made it now.
Wow. When Vander Blooming carves a pumpkin with your logo, you have arrived.
Yes. I think there's something like that.
Well, I saw it on Facebook.
Yes.
I gave it a like. I liked it.
I sent you a text with that.
You think William himself carved that?
I bet he did. I bet he spent all night one night carving that.
I can see William carving a pumpkin.
Yeah. Well, Vander Blooming Search Group, they are the premier pastor search firm dedicated to helping churches and ministries build great teams. They've helped hundreds of churches just like yours find their church staff and are uniquely geared to help you discern who God is calling to lead your church. Find out more about Vander Blooming Search Group by visiting westaffthechurch.com.
So what makes a great organization, Jonathan?
A great leader.
Okay, and great people working with that leader,
yes.
And those people are great leaders as well. And so we're going to talk now about a post that Dr. Lawless did some time ago, but I tell you, it was a really, really good post on Are You Leadership Material? And what's cool about this is I've served on more than one team with Chuck Lawless, and so I've had the opportunity to interact with him, see his leadership, he's seen my leadership, so I know that he knows what he's talking about.
Yes, and the way he wrote this post, it's 9 questions to ask yourself to determine if you are leadership material.
Yep. And the first one may be the toughest one.
Yes. If others knew my life intimately, would they want to follow me?
Yep. The question, of course, comes back to who are you in the private? Does it match who you are in the public? Do the things that you do, the things you watch, the things you say, the actions you have, the lifestyle you lead, are all those things part of your public persona and your private persona? Or do you have those deep hidden secrets that when it was all said and done, once they get exposed in the light, that people would not want to follow you? That is a tough one because we all have parts of our lives that we would say are not totally sanctified. But I know what Chuck was talking about here. He was talking about lives of habitual sin. And there are many people who will have this great front life, and then you start digging a little bit deeper and you find, oh my goodness, I did not know that he or she had that kind of life as well. So the first question is, if people really knew me, he used the word intimately, and I just say, if people really knew me, would they still want to follow me?
Yeah, it kind of starts with character here.
Yep. It starts and ends, and it's permeated throughout it all. It's all about character.
Do you think we're honest with ourselves whenever we answer this question?
No, I don't think we're totally honest with ourselves, and that's why we have other points on here that are going to help us be totally honest, because we need other people who speak into our lives.
Number 2, he asks, am I uncomfortable with the status quo?
Well, that's a good question, and that's kind of a double negative. The status quo is something that is negative. I understand that the status quo means you're staying the same, but it's a negative in our fast-changing world. And so are you uncomfortable with the status quo? Do you want to get beyond the status quo? And that's easy to answer if the status quo are things you don't like. I don't know why I have a food illustration, but I'm going to use a food.
I like it already.
No, you won't. You know, there are a few.
I like food.
I know, but not the ones I'm going to mention.
Oh.
Well, I don't know.
Sweet potato?
I don't mean to presume. Broccoli.
I like broccoli.
You like broccoli?
My kids eat the mess out of some broccoli.
I don't like broccoli. What food don't you like?
Sweet potato.
You don't like sweet potato?
Yeah.
Wow, that is food that you don't like that I do like.
Not a sweet potato guy. I like sweet potato fries, but not sweet potatoes.
That's really weird, Jonathan.
I know that is really weird.
Well, let's suppose that you don't like broccoli, and broccoli is the status quo.
Okay.
You know what? You want to change the status quo because it's something that you don't like. If you're in a bad job, and that's the status quo.
I have a great job.
I know. You have the best job in the world. If that's the status quo, it's a bad job, you want to get out of it. But what if things are going well, but you're not improving yourself?
Yeah.
What if you're in a maintenance mode? You ever known someone that's in a good situation, but in a maintenance mm-hmm. mode? That is
don't
a sign.
Don't want to rock the boat.
Yep, because rocking the boat may mean that things won't stay the way they are. But the thing about it is they're never going to stay the way they are. There's really no such thing as a status quo. It is an illusion. It's something that we try to keep.
All right. Now, this is a question for the status quo thing here I have for you. A lot of times in churches and denominational relations and stuff, we have what we'd like the way things are set up. Mm-hmm. We kind of know they need to change. We're uncomfortable with it, but we're not really willing to do anything about that status quo.
Oh, are you trying to ask loaded questions here?
I'm not asking a loaded question
at all. Yeah, well, some denominational structures do need to change, and things about our own denomination need to change. And I think that's become very, very evident. But it's not just our denomination and others as well. Why do we get comfortable with the status quo, say, in our denomination? Because, frankly, it's what we know. Mm-hmm. It's what we're comfortable with. And it is also what many times provides our paycheck.
Yeah.
And
well,
so
even in the local church.
Yeah.
Pastors know that, you know, I'm not comfortable with the status quo here at this church, but they're reticent to do anything because they know that if I start changing things, they might start changing me.
Right. And rocking the boat may mean you get rocked right out of the boat.
Yeah.
So those are some things that take courage and wisdom as well to know when it's time to go against the status quo.
Number three speaks to vision. Do I have a picture of a bright future?
One of the things I love to do is to talk to a leader who is a visionary and to listen to him or to her speak of that preferred future, to speak of what it could be like, what it should be like, what it might be like. Good leaders are always looking beyond today. In fact, good leaders should be even looking beyond their own tenure. They should be looking to the next generation and to the successors as well. But the question is, as I look into the future, do I truly have a vision of what God can do? Do I truly have a vision of what God might do? Do I truly have a vision of if I am used, I can be a part of that vision coming to fruition? Great leaders have great visionary outlooks. That's why they, I know it's a worn out metaphor, but that's why they tend to see the cup half full instead of half empty. Two people looking at the same thing, a visionary will say, let me tell you what this can be. And then the non-visionary will look at it and say, look what's not there. Mm. Quite a bit of difference.
Yeah. And it seems like number three overflows from the second question. To have that picture of a bright future, you've got to be uncomfortable with the status quo.
Yep. They are together because visionary people know that what is now will not be tomorrow.
Number four is, do I see people as God's gift or as a means to an end? You don't know anybody like this, do you?
Oh, man, a few. I tell you, this is loaded as well. None of us are perfect, and none of us have totally altruistic motives, I am sure. But the great leaders are always trying to develop the leaders under them. They're always trying to look after the good for them. They're asking the question, what is best for them instead of what is just best for how you can make my life better?
Yeah, what's best for the people under me, right?
Yeah, what is best for them, the people under them? For example, I would ask you, in fact, I have asked you, you know, what do you want to do in the future? You know, what is it that is your preferred future? I've asked the Amys this, and I've said, what do y'all want to do? What's not just career path, but, you know, what is a part of your plan that is a part of your dream? And if it's something that is different from here now, I would hate it, but I would want them to work toward that because leaders who see people as God's gift instead of something to help them move along, those are the true leaders that will make a difference.
Number five is just a simple question for leaders. Is anyone following me?
Yeah, that's the classic John Maxwell quote that you may not be a leader if there's no one following you.
Yeah.
And followership has really two different types of perspectives, Jonathan. There is formal followership. And by formal followership, I mean, at Lifeway, you got 5,500 people following me. Why? Because I have the title of president. It is a positional authority. Positional authority is not necessarily the same thing as real leadership. I may have 5,500 people under me in the org chart, but I bet I don't have 5,500 people following me in the truest sense of the word, because there will be people who disagree with me. They'll say that maybe there could be a better leader than Rainer, and I don't doubt them at that. So true leaders have true followers. And it's people who would follow them regardless of the position. They will follow them because of the influence that they have on the other people and on those who are following them.
Which one is more important, to have the followership or to have that position of leadership?
Oh, by far the followership. I would rather be a true leader who knows that people are following me because they want to follow me, rather than to be the president of Lifeway and have positional authority. If I had to trade between the two in a second, I'd trade it for the former.
Number six is, am I investing in anyone personally? This kind of goes back to, how do you see people?
Yeah, and investing in people personally means that it really does go back to that number four. Do I see people as God's gift rather than as a means to an end? If you do, then you are going to give them time. Some people think that time means some type of formal mentoring that is established. We're going to sit down, and every week at 2 o'clock on Wednesday for 2 hours, we're going to talk to each other. That might be part of it, but really investing in people means caring about them, listening to them, talking to them, sending them resources, keeping them in the loop. And, you know, one of the most important things to invest in people is just to keep them informed, just the whole idea of communication. So are you pouring into other people's lives, or are you keeping things close to your vest? Are you holding back information? Are you not talking to people about what's going on? Are the opportunities, are the development that could take place? All throughout Scripture, and I know that Dr. Lawless in his blog used the example of Jesus and Paul, but all throughout Scripture, there are examples of people pouring into the lives of others. That is a true leader, and it comes whether it's positional authority or not.
What are some reasons that leaders choose not to pour into others, or maybe reticent to?
I think it's the tyranny of the urgent. In other words, there's so many things that leaders are pressed to do. Sometimes we do the good at the neglect of the best. And so we have these full schedules. We have all of these items to check off. We have all of these meetings to attend. We have all of these necessary calendar items, and we let that slip. You know, it's kind of like Bible reading, personal Bible study. It's always easy to let Bible study be that which is left over instead of that which is planned. So we don't plan to adequately give people time. There was a time recently I was with a leadership group. In fact, it was my leadership, executive leadership team. We were on a mini retreat in the Nashville area. And we had this agenda, and I'm kind of notorious about sticking to agendas and time. Mm-hmm. But there was just this hour and a half moment at the start of the second day where we just started talking about things. It wasn't on the agenda. It wasn't on any type of schedule. There weren't minutes allocated. But it was one of those moments where we were all kind of investing in each other. And we were talking about things that we didn't plan to. And my temptation as a leader was stick to the schedule. But I had to have a pause in my spirit because I said, oh, this is an opportunity not only for me to invest in these people in this informal conversation, but for them to do mutually as well. So I let the agenda slide for 90 minutes. Then I made them make it up.
Yeah, that's exciting. I bet the rest of the day was just crammed full of stuff. When you start talking about this, you talk about it in an unintentional way.
Yeah.
You know, I can easily see how someone would refuse to invest in people under them that they're leading because maybe they're threatened by them, or, you know, they just don't feel like it's their responsibility, even though, you know, Dr. Lawless says it is here. But there's also that unintentional way where we neglect to invest in others.
Oh, yeah. It can be both benign neglect or negative neglect. Either way, double negative, whichever way you want to look at it. We can fail to do so just because we're not putting on our schedule. But some leaders are threatened by others. And they think if they invest in someone else, then that's going to take away my visibility, my platform, my sense of importance. And so they do not have the security to invest in others.
The seventh question here, I think, really ties back into what Brad Laminate talked about whenever he was on the show, is that if I leave, will the ministry carry on well?
You know, one thing you haven't said about me lately, and I think it's because you said maybe we just need to pull back on these type of things, me talking about your children, and you remember what you were talking about with me?
I have no idea.
Yeah, my age.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, 60 years. Oh,
It's possible that I've been talking about it and you've just forgotten because of the old age and
stuff. That's true. Thank you, Bill, for reminding me of that particular point. But as I age, as I am in now my sixth decade, I guess I'm in my seventh decade, really.
I think so. That's because, how you did the math.
Yeah, because if when you're born, you're in your first decade. Mm-hmm. So, wow.
It makes it even worse. Did this one, not me.
I am in my seventh decade, and here is the number one thing that I think about with my leadership. What will happen when I leave? Not that Lifeway revolves around me. Goodness gracious. I'm the ninth president since 1891. Obviously, it's done fine before and it will do fine later. But am I doing the things that are best for Lifeway, or am I doing the things that are best for Tom Rainer? Mm. And sometimes I don't have a lot of clarity on that. And that is the main thing I'm concerned about. What am I leaving behind more than what am I doing now?
Number eight is, am I continuing to learn?
Oh, I tell you what, I recently saw a HBR article, and I love Harvard Business Review, yep. And I love their blogs, I love their magazine that comes out, just incredible content. Now, I understand it's secular content, but it's just really good stuff. And it gave the two characteristics of leaders by their assessments, most dynamic leaders. One of them was they were competitive. Mm-hmm. They desired to win. They desired to be the best in their area. And the other one was they were continuous learners. We have a lot of continuous learners around here. Eric Geiger, who works on my team, almost every week he's reading another book. And he's saying, have y'all read this book? Or have you read this book? And continuous learners are not only reading in their own field, but they're reading outside their field. One of the areas where I had to get real uncomfortable reading, Jonathan, was the area of technology. And I started doing that about 3 or 4 years ago. Not that I'm getting into the granular. I don't think you want me as a programmer.
No.
I don't think you want me messing with hardware.
No.
You know all of those things, but I had to understand the big picture of IT, had to understand the big picture of technology just to get a grasp on some of the things that we were doing at Lifeway. So I got real uncomfortable and started reading stuff, of course, at a pretty basic level so I could learn technology. I didn't enjoy it that much, but it was part of my continuous learning in order to be more well-rounded as a leader, especially here.
Now, the final point that Dr. Lawless made here and the final question he asks is, am I accountable to someone for my godliness?
You know, if that is a formal relationship, I get uncomfortable with it. There are a lot of people who do not, and more power to you. It's like, Jonathan, tell me what you have read today in the scripture. Tell me how God has spoken to you. Tell me who you shared your faith with. Tell me about your relationship with your wife. Let me see all your computer viewings, all of those things. I know that that's good for some people, and they need that formal accountability. So if you're out there and that is the kind of accountability, if you're listening to this, I'm not denigrating it. I'm not knocking it. I do better with informal accountability because that type of formal stuff, maybe it's the introvert thing. And if there are some people to whom I'm accountable, one would be my wife. It's just very obvious in the way we interact with each other. Another one would be Brad Wagner. And he'll come in, he'll just say, have you read this passage yet? Or, what do you think about this? Have you read this in your quiet time? He's not testing me. But the very fact that we have a conversation about the Bible, the very fact that we talk about who we're sharing our faith with, is a form of accountability. And I like the informal method better, but there's some out there that need the rigidity and the accountability of formal talk to me, what are you doing? Yeah. So it works both ways.
Yeah. And it's personality based, it seems.
Yeah, I think the introvert in me would want the more informal rather than the formal.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody came to work for me, working at Lifeway not too long ago, and he started asking me questions. He said, are you bitter toward anyone? And I looked at him, what is this, some type of accountability test? I said, no way, Those are the kind of things I don't really like. I like the more informal where I feel comfortable.
All right, well, that wraps up our 9 questions. Thank you to Dr. Lawless for that post. As always, Trinity Evangelical Divinity School is one of our sponsors. Glad to have them on board. They are a dynamic community of learners who are serious about ministry preparation, biblical studies, theological reflection, and cultural engagement. Their faculty are gifted men and women who minister as much through research and writing as through local church involvement, but their primary ministry is teaching and caring for students. You can find out more about Trinity Evangelical Divinity School at divinity.tiu.edu. That's going to do it for today's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts?
So thankful to Dr. Lawless for the blog post that gave us the impetus for this podcast. I got to say this before we go, Jonathan. I saw a video of Dr. Dockery. I don't think I sent it to you. Dr. Dockery is the president of Trinity, yeah. Trinity Evangelical Divinity School.
What kind of video of Dr. Dockery?
It was a basketball game.
Oh, yes. I did see this. I saw this too on Twitter. That was hilarious.
Yeah. Someone did a dunk as he stood there.
Yeah. They have a basketball team at Trinity.
Yeah.
And they were having their Midnight Madness or whatever to kick off basketball practice. And the guy dunked over David Dockery.
That is absolutely fearless.
I mean, I could not have just stood there and just waited for that because I mean, he barely cleared him. But he cleared him.
Wow.
But how much pressure is on that kid? Hey, you're going to go dunk over the president of the university.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of pressure was on him, and I'm glad.
I'm glad he made it.
I'm glad he cleared.
For his sake and for Dr. Dockery's.
So Dr. Dockery is a multifaceted man, but also providing great leadership at Trinity Evangelical.
I'll have to find that video and see if I can put it on the bottom of the show.
There you go. Today. There you go.
Because it was fascinating.
There you go.
Oh, couldn't do that. All right. Well, thanks for joining us today on Rainer on Leadership. As always, please provide us with a review and a rating over at iTunes and join us online at tomrainer.com.